Episode 255.
The thing that has been so alarming for us are some of the demographics. In particular, the fact that almost 70% of our working force of technicians is now over the age of 45. And almost 40% are over the age of 55. That means we've got a problem coming at us like a freight train.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thanks for listening to the premier aftermarket podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. Hey, did you know that 60% of independent shop owners are paying for their technician training, and that almost 70% of working technicians are over the age of 45? Hey, welcome to episode 255 with Dave Milne from ATMC and ASE. Now get ready for a very eye-opening interview with the president of the Automotive Training Managers Council and the executive director of ASE. Hey, this episode is presented by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. Now, when you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Enco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more, they're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. And thanks for your support of these brands. I'm so honored to sit behind the mic three times a week, twice doing the one-on-one industry interviews, and once with the Town Hall Academy. I'm privileged to help aftermarket professionals achieve their own remarkable results, and you'll always get something from each and every interview. Hey, if you're receiving benefit from the podcast, don't hesitate to get easy access to all the content on your smart device. The links to download my free app and to connect with me on all my social sites is remarkableresults.biz/social. Hey, thanking my newest Facebook friends, Joseph Urkowski, Jay Williams, and Nathan Auchman, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Marco Frescio, Dan Chappelle, and Fred Ewells II. Hey, don't hesitate to get on board to my LinkedIn and or Facebook pages. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. And one more thing, we are releasing every Academy episode as a podcast, so you'll be able to enjoy the great lessons from your industry colleagues while you're on the go. Find every Academy video and audio at remarkableresults.biz/academy. Now, let's listen to the perspectives of Dave Milne, the president of ATMC, the Automotive Training Managers Council, and the executive director of ASE. Dave is a legacy aftermarket professional and has a great perspective on the value of training in the industry. ATMC's mission is to improve the quality of training through the collaboration of its members. The organization is made up of aftermarket manufacturers that provide training, companies like Gates, Standard Motor Products, and Federal Mogul Motor Parts, just to name a few, along with membership from the OEs and training and software providers. Dave and I talk about a recent survey that was sent out to 150,000 industry technicians. It was the most comprehensive survey they ever gave. There was an outstanding 3,200 replies. 51% of them came from the independent side of the business. The survey data is a comprehensive look at our industry's demographics, the aging workforce, the method of paying technicians, training methods, who pays for training, and the top training topics that techs want. Dave and I cover these highlights, and there's no need to write the stats discussed in the episodes. Go to the show notes page. There's an extended bio on Dave and the key talking points from the episode. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E255. Not only do we cover the survey data, but we talk about recruiting for our profession through our educational system. And we also discuss the need to engage all new tech school graduates with meaningful work. Now, get ready for some enlightenment as we hear and learn from Dave Milne. Here we go. Hey, it's nice to be with Dave Milne, Executive Director for National Institute of Automotive Service Excellence. We all know that as ASE. And the President of the Automotive Training Managers Council. And we all know that as ATMC. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Carm, and thanks for having me on today.
Boy, we have so many acronyms in our industry, don't we?
We do, and you know, maybe I should start with just a little explanation about ATMC, because we're not exactly a household acronym out there. Even though we've been around for since 1984, we're a group of about 160 training managers. We are represented by about a third of our members are OE manufacturers, or have vested interests in training with them, and that's both automotive and truck. And almost all of the automotive and truck manufacturers who are selling vehicles in the U.S. are a part of ATMC. And the other third is comes from the aftermarket, folks with training programs such as Gates or Federal Mogul or Standard Motor Products. They send representatives to us also. And then the other third are folks who support training in some way, either software developers or publishers or educators, folks of that nature. And we all come together and we sort of set aside our competitive differences and work on training problems that are common to all of us. And we use our collective knowledge to do that. And collective knowledge is really a powerful thing.
I was in Las Vegas last year at your awards ceremony, which is a great thing. Tell me a little bit about how that happens and how the nominations happen, how you get someone to those high honors.
Sure. We have a call for nominations to our National Excellence in Training Awards, which we give to a training provider or several training providers each year. And they have to submit proposal to us about their training. It follows along the lines of the components that make up our CASE accreditation program. That's our Continuing Automotive Service Education accreditation program. And that's an ASE accreditation that's given to training providers who are following the guidelines set up and administered by ATMC. So we'll have anywhere between 8 and 12 submissions every year. We empower a judging panel of our members to look at these submissions, and they'll rate them on a very objective basis. Those who come out at top are given the ATMC National Excellence in Training Award.
How is a service professional or a technician in our industry affected by ATMC?
Well, I think that our mission at ATMC is to improve the quality of training through collaboration of our members. And I think that's where technicians will see it most. We're designed to improve training for working technicians. We're not really into the vocational end of it. We leave that to the NATEF group and AYES group. Ours is to ensure constant improvement in training for working technicians.
Excellent. There's going to be some residual that's going to trickle down, that's going to make seminars and the transfer of knowledge so much better because of ATMC.
Absolutely.
I'm a curious guy, always have been, Executive Director, National Institute, ASE, and president of ATMC. Are these like sister groups or companies?
Yeah, they are. The ATMC was really brought into the ASE Industry Education Alliance in 2009. And as so many, in 2009, everybody was scrapping for resources to keep their organizations alive. We saw that happening to ATMC. We didn't want that group to go defunct because we saw a lot of potential in it here at ASE. So we brought it into the fold, and now ATMC utilizes the resources of ASE to perform their day-to-day functions and manage the business and et cetera. And as part of that agreement, the ASE president, Tim Zilke, now appoints the president of ATMC. We still are governed by an independent board, but ASE appoints the president to that.
And you currently have that nod.
Yes, correct. And the great thing is I'm able to utilize all of the resources of ASE to do the work that ATMC wants to do. And I don't think a lot of people realize the extent that ASE reaches out within the industry and other areas and provides resources to the industry in order to support the the quality of the programs that we have.
You are so right, because when we hear NATEF, when we hear AES, when we hear ASE, when we hear ATMC, okay, they're organizations that work hard at doing something. And not everyone quite understands how that all works. You have made it so crystal clear here. Wow, we can hang up right now and we're done with it. I'm satisfied. We've done a great interview.
I appreciate the opportunity to let the industry know this more, because, as I said, sometimes I feel like ASE doesn't get the credit for everything that they do within the industry.
Glad to hear you say that. You and I had a great pre-call. You said, Carm, there's a big disconnect with industry and the education system. What did you mean by that?
What I meant is that we hear constantly from both sides. We hear from the industry that students are not being fully prepared when they come to them, that they have expectations that are too high, that they don't have the patience required to go through and develop the experience they need to be a top-notch technician. And then on the other side of it, we hear instructors and educators say that the industry has a poor image, that they don't provide enough intern opportunities for our students, that when our students get into a work situation, that they're not always happy with it, and that the response from employers is not what it should be in making sure that they stay in there. Heck, we know that about, you know, I hear from educators that about 50% of their kids who go through their curriculums, make the transition to the industry, aren't there 5 years later. They're not in the industry at all. So we're obviously not doing a good job of onboarding them. We're not doing a good job of rewarding them, maybe. And we're not doing a good job of challenging them sometimes, too.
You know, Dave, there's a couple of apprentice programs that are out there that are, if you will, starting to get hold, because they've outlined processes and systems, and this is the way you need to, must have to do it. Is it time for your organization to write the white paper on onboarding? Is it time for some organization in the industry to say, let's stop the insanity and let's take these students and really embrace them in a way that's not being done?
Well, I think that's the goal of the work that we're trying to do now. And what we're laying the foundation for is to resolve those disconnects and put together programs that onboard these students, keep them happy, keep them in the jobs, provide them with a lot of tenure. All of this is really driven, Carm, by some of the information that is in our training benchmark survey.
I'm talking with Jonathan Ciccelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Now, you're visiting shops every day, so when you put product in the hands of the technicians and service advisors, what are they saying?
Going back to Federmogul's long-term presence in the industry, they already know the product. And some of them we don't have to say much about. It's the newer product, the latest innovations that we come out with that just blow people away.
So, Jonathan, you take that brand new OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
They look at it and are kind of speechless for a couple seconds. And they just can't deny that it's an awesome-looking product. And they can't deny that it's going to work fantastic on their vehicles.
Now, another phenomenal product line that is just one of the most iconic brands in the entire industry is Moog. Now, there's a lot going on with Moog.
The newest thing with Moog is going to be, I think, the most important thing to the shops is the newer design ball joint that we created. And that was off of technicians' responses to a boot design.
That's that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
Absolutely. And as soon as I pull that out of a box and show a technician or a shop owner, they just were like, this is amazing.
So, Jonathan, would you say that you're a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts and all the premium products?
Absolutely.
And a champion for all the training?
I'm very big on training. I've always been in training since I've been in the professional field, so just to come back and support on the other end has just been an awesome experience.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. to our audience, one of the main talking points that we have for you is this great survey that may hit you upside the head. As I was going through it, I kept saying, this case just can't be.
Certainly, this has been alarming for our members, and it has been motivating for our members also. We've been doing the survey for a while, but we've been adding more and more portions to it, and it's been building more and more information for us that's truly helps our mission. But lately, rather than the information about training and how people want to receive training and what's effective for them, the thing that has been so alarming for us are some of the demographics. In particular, the fact that almost 70% of our working force of technicians is now over the age of 45. And almost 40% are over the age of 55. That means we've got a problem coming at us like a freight train. The thing that concerns our members as trainers so much is there are just not enough young people coming into the industry to fill those vacancies that will be caused by retirements. Because one of the other things we know is not many of these practitioners, of these service professionals, hang around after they're 65 years old. For our members, the problem is they're going to have to go fishing in different pools because there's no way we're going to be able to fill those retirements from the kids who are coming to us through the vocational education system now. So if we're going to fish in different pools, that means the folks we're going to be bringing in probably won't have any training at all. And the cost of training them is then going to become the burden of the industry rather than the burden of a student who's preparing himself for this career. And how much is that going to cost us? It's going to cost us a lot.
You know, I saw a stat that you had, and I can't immediately find it here, but maybe it was about 38% are entering the industry without any vocational training. And I find that so interesting because you're right, the learning curve there is pretty big. So what happens? That becomes a general service tech who's mopping bathrooms and cleaning up after the ATECs. And after a year, they say, this isn't a romantic type of industry. I don't believe I'm in the transportation business. I'm a grunt. I'm a private.
And all too often, that happens not to just the kids who are coming in without any training whatsoever. It's happening to the kids coming out of vocational school. They get assigned menial tasks rather than something meaningful. And we know one thing about this generation is they place a lot of value on being of service to others. We're, you know, in a task where they're getting menial jobs, they're not exactly being of service to others. And this is a job that lends itself to service to others.
Yeah, they want meaningful work. That's the key to the millennial workforce. Parents, educators, Dave, shop owners, they're all keys to this puzzle.
Absolutely. Of course, we have a terrible image with parents. They look at our jobs as being dirty, hard work, that under poor working conditions, unrewarding for folks. And whereas really the problem is they don't know about all the various opportunities in the automotive industry. And the other problem is there are still way too many examples that feed into those stereotypes for them to see in our industry. So we've got a lot of work to do in cleaning that up. Not that there are great practitioners, there are great shops and great employers out there. So what we have to tell them, and you know, we can't ignore the fact that we have the other problem. We got to own that problem.
Dave, how do we get that? You know, those top 5% shop owners, and I'm not saying that they're the only ones that matter in our industry, but they have demonstrated that they can hire great people, run great shops, have a fabulous image in our industry. It's like the neurosurgeon who gets that great news article, does, wow, you got to be a neurosurgeon. You're smart and you could do that and you could help change the world. The TV news that every once in a while goes out and does the scams on the automotive, and there's enough guys out there that can fall into that trap. And who knows how legit all of those are. And you're right, that's our image problem. So where is AESC, ATMC, AutoCare, where is the industry helping the PR side so that the parents will say, listen, son, you just have demonstrated so much on working with your hands. How about electricity? How about plumbing? What about carpentry? What about automotive technician?
That's certainly the problem we face is convincing them that this is a great career with a lot of great opportunities. You don't have to just go in and work at that job as a technician even. If you properly prepare yourself, there are immense number of opportunities that you can seize along the way and grow your career. Convincing parents of that now, you know, that's, Carm, you know how hard it is to change, to make a difference in consumer advertising. It is hard and it's expensive to move that needle.
Dave, let's talk about, okay, so we would have to have a multi-billion dollar campaign to improve the image. Let's talk about the educators then. You know, you had mentioned it. We've got a group in vocational school today, but they come out and they don't stay. There's a percentage of them that don't stay. So if we could narrow that billion-dollar spend to a focus on the educators, something that you could actually touch more often with NATEF, right? There's a lot of great technicians that are graying, because we just talked about that. They would make fabulous instructors.
Yeah. Part of the problem that they have in the vocational industry right now is they've got the same graying problem that we have. Their vocational instructors are all graying out and retiring at the same time. And we've got to look at training our technicians and training our instructors at the same time. We've got to produce stuff that is pertinent to both, and we've got to include those educational instructors. Here's one big problem that we see from the industry side looking at the educational system. All too often, when that instructor leaves the industry and goes to working as an instructor in a voc ed program, they become frozen in time right there. And they have trouble teaching topics beyond what they've experienced as a technician. And they're in a position where they can't get the same level of training that they were getting while they were on the job, whether it be interaction with other technicians or interaction with the training program. They become frozen in time. And so that's the level to which we get to, technician or the students trained to too. So we've got to have a program that reaches not only technicians, reaches not only the industry, but reaches down to the instructors also.
I love what you just said, frozen in time, because I had always been saying the words staying current. And what you just described was a much more eloquent way to say if they don't get any more education, they are stuck or frozen in time. Some instructors I know, they go and they find their local, you know, parts distributor that has a class, but it doesn't seem that there's a requirement from the school that the educator has to have so many current hours of training. Do you hear that?
There is the NATEF standards which require that for instructors, but their requirement is 20 hours per year of instruction. And we know as working technicians, that's not enough to stay current. We kind of use as rule of thumb 40 hours, and we know that that's not enough often. With that 40 hours, you got to kind of specialize and focus your training in certain areas.
Okay, Dave. So if we were talking parents and educators, now there's the shop owner that is almost occasionally guilty because the menial jobs are coming out. Oh, you got to have $70,000 worth of tools. Oh my.
Who's telling them that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something, Dave. I believe, here's what I believe. Somebody, the number keeps getting bigger because the chest keeps getting bigger. It's almost like my toolbox is bigger than yours, and somebody's looking at that saying, well, I got $70,000 worth of tool in there, and the young man who just came to work 3 months in, he's saying, whoa, and I wanted to buy a really cool car. I'll never be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you're right. A lot of it is peer pressure within the shop. you know, status within the shop. You got to have that big box, you know, and I just, you know, we got to get away from that because that keeps so many kids from ever coming into this. Heck, they've just invested maybe, if they've got a post-secondary education, they've just invested, you know, $15,000 to $30,000 in that education. They're having to pay off that student loan, and now they're looking at acquiring $50,000 to $70,000 worth of tools over the next 5 to 7 years in their career. That's overwhelming for a lot of them.
Well, I'm contributing to that cause because on a Future Academy town hall that we do every week on a Friday live at noon, we're going to have a panel in place talking about buying your technician's tools. And it's we're going to have two shop owners and a technician on. And we hope that we're going to be able to change a little paradigm here as to why that should be done.
I just came from the ASE Industry Education Alliance Conference, and there we had a roundtable discussion between industry and instructors over these types of issues. Every time that in the meeting somebody brought up one of these roadblocks, the great thing was, you know, we had about 120, 130 people in the room. And once again, you could see the power of collective knowledge. Every time somebody brought up one of these roadblocks, somebody else in that room stood up and said, you know, here's how I fix that in my school.
Hey, Dave, if there's anything the podcast can do by getting all those different opinions out, you just said, hey, listen, someone stood up and says, listen, I've figured out how to solve this. Someone stood up and says, I figured out how to solve that. Get those people to me and let's get their story told. Because the more we continue to tell stories, the more that the podcast becomes the centerpiece of networking inside the industry, the more we're going to help spread the word. Because there's a lot of people that don't go to your conferences and don't go to Apex and don't go to Vision and don't go to Automechanica. And that's where they're getting their uptake. Yeah, through magazines and through the podcast. So anything I can do to help in that regard. Now, let's jump back into this incredible ATMC survey. How is your pay structured? And the choices were salary, hourly, flat rate, and other. And I really find it interesting, the results.
I do too, maybe for different reasons. Of course, we know what the salary, hourly, flat rate, what everybody's familiar with those. The other portion we found was when they made comments on it, was a hybrid of two of these is basically what it worked out. Okay, I'm on flat rate, but I do get a commission, you know, based upon what I'm doing. But when you look at the industry averages, 29.5 to almost 30% are on a salary. Almost 36% are hourly, and only 27% are on flat rate. That's encouraging because I think one of the things that is a roadblock for everybody in this industry is flat rate. Now, even though you see those figures there, when we apply that same question to individual workplace settings, when we apply it to OE, when we apply it to aftermarket, and we apply it to fleet, the results are dramatically different. Dramatically. Like for the independents, they're leaning more towards salary than anything else right now, with about 38% of folks who work in the independent shops being salaried, with 30% being hourly. And only about 20% being on flat rate. But when you look over at the OEs, almost 60% of their folks are on flat rate. Now, I understand why that is. You know, the OEs build that system around their warranty work, and they have to have a way to administer that. But I think more and more are moving towards salary and hourly now. This is the first time we asked this question, So it'll be real interesting to see what kind of trend we have as we go forward with this.
Thank you for that, because in many of the other results, you had the 2015, 2016, and 2017. And I kept flipping through the book saying, where was that trending? But this was your first year on that question. But still, Dave, you're right. It's amazing. About 65% salary, hourly, together. There's been so much talk on the podcast about moving away from flat rate. I may have to start changing my questioning because of the share, you know, only 20% of shops today and the independent side are doing flat rate.
I had some of our fleet members talk to their technicians because you can see that fleet, 74% of all the folks in fleet are on hourly wage and 23% are on salary. That means that And flat rate is almost non-existent among the fleet world. Now, I do hear that they use it for a comparison to make sure that their folks are staying at about where they should be in production. But that's the only way that they're using it. But what we also hear is I'm hearing from our members in all portions that we're seeing a trend of technicians moving from independents and dealerships to fleet. And we're wondering if this is part of the reason. I go to work every week and I know exactly what I'm going to make. Plus, we hear that benefits may be a little better on the fleet end, particularly when we're talking about municipal fleets. So that could be a sign for the rest of the industry that, these guys, if you want somebody with some tenure, that's the direction you need to move.
And it's not unlike what I continue to hear, where some of the techs are moving. Municipalities, fleets. Heck, I know one great tech just moved to work on forklifts after working his whole life for an independent.
Yeah, he probably cut his tool bill in half.
And increased his benefit program. When you're graying, based on the stats that you've got here, and you haven't done well enough to plan for the future. Benefits really help. It puts more cash in the bank, allows you to be a better saver. You know, I'll never be 65. I'll never be 55. I'll never be 45. And all of a sudden, you know what happens?
Yeah, I'm 55 and I'm beginning to worry.
It creeps right up there, you know? Snap your fingers, a day goes by. Snap two, a week goes by. Oh, great stuff. Thank you for bringing this to me. Now, I found another fascinating piece of information, who pays for training, that really excited me. In 2017, of the respondents, 68% said that the employer pays for training. The trend is up.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find that more and more as, you know, the value of a technician becomes greater. And, you know, we've talked for so many years, Carm, in this industry about a technician shortage. And in all of those years, if there was a shortage, you would have thought that the cost of living for them would have been, there would have been an improvement. There would have been a rise in the cost of, or the value of wages, but we haven't seen that. And, you know, in thinking back on that, I think before what we called a shortage of technicians was really caused by a glut of shops. In other words, too many shops vying for the customer's business and vying for qualified technicians to come and work for them. You may have one guy who across town, he's got three technicians and he's only got enough work for two and a half. At the same time, you got a guy on the other side of the town and he's got enough work for three technicians, but he's only got two. That's kind of where we saw the shortage, but customer cars are still getting fixed on a timely basis. With this graying out of the workplace, I think for the first time we may feel the pain, and I don't think anybody will be exempt from feeling that pain. Because we're just too far behind now with the new folks coming into the pipeline.
I believe that a tech could name his salary and move anywhere in the country he wants to and find an incredible job, because there are shops out there willing to pay the right amount for the right person with the right benefits, with the right work schedule, with the right tool program, with the right everything.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think it is one of the few jobs now that you could say to your son or daughter, if you want to always have a job, this is some place that you ought to look.
So staying with who pays for training, the next slide was really interesting, and I think it's something I want my independent listeners to understand. The OEs pay for training 80%. 80% of the OEs pay for training, 60% of the independents. I guess the point is that, well, the OEs training is probably quickly free and available because that's their network at work. But still in all, you never want to lose a tech because I'm going to go to the OE because they're going to train me better and more often than you are.
And, you know, one of the things that you said in there, I don't know if it how you meant it, but they say the training is free. Well, it's free to the technician, but it's not free to the dealership. These dealerships pay a price for that training.
Sure they do. Absolutely. And that is what I meant, Dave. Thank you for that.
For me, in the independents, the fact was, you know, 23% of the employees are having to pay for their training entirely.
Hey, Dave, there's another slide. Which of these factors in your inability to get the necessary training? Pick five. And right up at the top of the list is, I just can't get the right training, 75%. You have any background on that?
We do this as a parallel study. We're asking the same thing in a certain way of the providers. And it's odd because the providers say, I provide all of this training and I can't get folks to come to my training. Maybe it's a disconnect rather in terms of having some communication mechanism between the two as to what's available and what they want. That's really was the basic design of this from our members' viewpoint, was so that they could go through all of this and then they could align their training with what technicians prefer. And so that's really been meaningful, but over the years, these have all remained pretty constant, as you can see from that slide. So I don't know that we're actually getting the job done.
So that my listener can really appreciate this, since we're not putting up a slide visually in front of them, some of the answers here, which of these factors in your inability to get the necessary training was availability of the right training, which was 75%, lack of quality training, 50%, high cost of training, 48%, inability to take time off, 42%, excessive travel was 32%, lack of required equipment, 21%, unwilling to sacrifice my time. I'm glad it's at the bottom. It's only 9%. And then the lack of internet access was 4%. But I loved the responses here. And it really, I think, opened up our eyes to every excuse you'd ever want to possibly know why I can't get trained.
Yeah, you can tell the trainers who helped develop all of these questions have heard it all before.
So it goes back to what you were saying about having the right training. And then the next slide, it's exactly what I would have expected. And, you know, as a podcaster, what I continue to hear from the industry, where are your training needs the greatest? Tell us about that.
It should be no surprise to anybody that the greatest training need is on electrical and electronic topics. That's certainly where we're weakest. Our ASE testing shows that that's where technicians are weakest in their understanding of the physics behind it, as well as the diagnostic procedures that you would use. The funny thing, Carm, is that up until about 3 years ago, hybrid and EV topped the list. But now I think that we're all finding that we don't see that many of the cars in the shop. We see them for general maintenance, and that's it. But they've proven to be pretty reliable, and the manufacturers do a pretty good job of trying to pull those hybrid owners back into their shops because everybody sees it as a higher technology that maybe only those folks can solve.
Let me tell you, I've interviewed a lot of great, great shops that are all really moving into the hybrid world. Some of them are even rebranding almost a second name on their building for hybrids, especially the group out in San Fran that I interview quite often. So a hybrid is second. And then number three was advanced engine performance, came in at 46% of the survey.
That, of course, is training that's related to RL1 for advanced engine performance. And that continues to be, of course, the toughest test for our candidates to pass. And it requires that you have passed prerequisite tests already. It's a tough test. And I think there are a lot of folks who realize they need a lot more work in it before they're at a level of competency that the industry requires.
I just love the survey and I love the results. I can imagine the value that your ATMC members, it helps them affirm that they're doing the right things. And this is directly at technicians in the field and shop owners?
I think this is probably the largest survey directed at technicians in the industry that is all as encompassing as this. You know, a lot of manufacturers survey their own technicians, but we actually drew 150,000 folks out of the ASE database at random and sent the survey or the invitation for them to participate in the survey out. So some of these folks are certified, some are not certified or are considering certification. So it's wide ranging. And we got 3,200 people who responded to this and completed the whole survey. We probably had twice that who started the survey, but it's a long survey. And I appreciate the dedication of those technicians who took the time and shop owners to really go through the whole thing and give us this remarkable data. I'm starting to see it show up everywhere in the industry. I don't know anybody else who's doing something as encompassing with this, with as large an audience as we are.
It's great news that you've led this, that ATMC members are valuing this data. There's no doubt that the major manufacturers that have programs out and the expert trainers, they're in the field every day. They're hearing from their students. They're visiting shops. They're getting this kind of feedback. But to verify it all like this,
Carm, did I send you another document with the responses, the comments that were left by the participants? I need to send you that because the comments are fabulous. They really are. So many of the technicians thanking us for doing this because they realize that you know, putting this type of information together for the industry is going to lead to good things.
So where's the future going?
I think we're going to have to steer it. That's for sure. We cannot continue to go along at the pace or in the direction that we have. We're going to have to veer off of this because, as I said before, these problems are coming at us like a freight train, and there's just no way that anybody's that is going to avoid some pain from this. We'll all feel the pain from these problems. We as ATMC have been spent quite a while, you know, collecting ideas on what we can do, and now we're starting to move in certain directions where we feel like we can make a difference. One of the things is that we're going to be doing is we're collaborating with the Tech Force Foundation to address and bring our message to middle school students. And a number of our training developers are working with the Tech Force Foundation to develop a hands-on experience for middle schoolers that we're initially going to pilot it at science centers, but we're hoping to take it to science centers and science museums around the country where they allow kids to come in and do tactile things. You know, one of the problems we have, I think, Carm, is that when you and I were growing up, we were able to hang over the fender of that car with our dad and watch as he tinkered with it, or he'd let us do a few things. And, you know, we found how rewarding that was to fix something that was broke and bring it back to life. Kids don't have that opportunity anymore. They can't hang over the fender with, they can't work at the corner garage anymore. They don't have those kind of experiences to teach them how rewarding a job with their hands can be. And maybe they're not successful at other things, but they're tactile learners. They can suddenly learn that. So that's a project that we're working on, and we're hoping that, you know, the curriculum that we build for this will be so appealing to students, we'll be able to move this out into the industry and out within many communities. So that's one of the things we're doing. The other is that we feel that it's important that we begin to build a record of the opportunities available to young people in this industry, because they and their parents don't realize what a huge industry this is, and the wide varieties of opportunities for them, and that being a technician can be a gateway to all of those things. We want to build, you know, a resource at which they can learn about the variety of opportunities within the this discipline.
I love it. I am so interested in both of these, the tech force and the, you know, building the resource opportunities for young people coming into the industry. I thought that just came through my head. Could ATMC create a presentation or a white paper or something where every shop owner can get their hands on it, and they're out on a mission? You know, it's October 12th, and everybody from the industry is going to swarm onto a school or a parent-teacher group or a guidance counselor group and say, and be an evangelist for our industry with a singular message. Possible? You can help do that?
I certainly think it's possible. We're trying to work towards that. You know, one of the problems that we have is resources in each of our member companies. It seems like whenever things get tough, the first budget that gets cut is the training budget. And so many of our members are having to do more with less. So it's taken a little longer for us to address these things than I'd like. You know, I don't want to age out before this is
no, you won't.
Is complete. You know, I'm trying to match my patience with what our members can actually do.
You know, we covered some great stuff. Educational and industry disconnect. We talked about the aging workforce. We talked about results from the survey, which were very profound, but also enlightening. There were some good stuff in there, too. Very good stuff. Dave Milne, Executive Director for ASE and President of Automotive Training Managers Council. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Carm, it was a real pleasure.
Thank you, Dave Milne, for paying it forward and bringing your wisdom and perspectives on some key areas of concern in our aftermarket. The survey data proved what we all know about our aging workforce and the tenure of our technicians. We just need to be proactive as an industry and work together to resolve some of the challenges discussed in this interview. It's great to know that ATMC and ASE are working together to improve and find solutions for our industry's concerns. Hey, get to this episode's show notes page for the key talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E255. I've documented for you the key technician survey stats that were discussed in this interview. I know when you commute or exercise, it's tough to take notes, so consider it done. I revel in the knowledge that I'm helping you achieve your own remarkable results. Listen to learn just one thing, but hey, don't forget to implement it. Hey, thanks for your support, and until next time.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.